too can satisfy. This morning we're in Philippians chapter 4. And if you'd like to turn there with me this morning and follow along, that would be great. We're in Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 20. In my Bible, the page is 979. In your Bible, it might be something different. I don't know. But we're looking at unparalleled generosity. We're going to talk about money a little bit today. So if you're visiting, a guest with us, or checking us out, this is the day that you're going to say, see, I knew those Baptists, all they ever do is talk about money. And so I'll just warn you ahead of time that we're going to talk a little bit about money, but more importantly than money, we're going to talk about God and all that he's done for us. And so by setting that up, this week I was talking with my one daughter. I won't say the name of the daughter. She has no idea that I'm sharing this morning, but she'll be irritated in a minute. But my daughter and I, we were talking and driving around, and we were talking about relationships and the difference between guys and girls. And she was really helping me to understand this. And she said, you know, there's a big difference between men and women, and guys at her age aren't really understanding this. Some do and most of them don't. She said that women will often vent and only want to get it off of their chest, where men hear the women venting and they decide, oh, that means that I should go into motion and fix the problem that you're venting about. Ladies, is that the appropriate response that you want for men to do? Not always. She said, well, this is an issue. You know, sometimes we don't want anything fixed. All we want to do is share the things that are going on in our lives. Well, at that point, I realized that she probably would be a great marriage counselor, you know, and straighten out about 90% of the issues because, you know, sometimes we just want to vent, don't we? Generally speaking, I think that most of us would rather vent than do something about the problem. Now, you say, nah, not me. I'm different than that. And you probably are. So it's probably talking about the person next to you, your spouse probably, because you're thinking, I wish they would change. Now I could vent about that. Anyway, we're all a bit more comfortable there, and here's why I say that. I've heard many people vent about how much they weigh and do very little about it. I hear people vent about their financial condition that they're in and do little about it. I hear little about, you know, the venting about, oh man, I wish our marriage was better, but do nothing or little about it. And those are just picking on a few. And you're not amused so far, but let's go a little bit further. What about helping the poor? The people that don't have nearly what we have. Well, here's the reality. Some people get in gear and they say, I need to do something about this. I have to find a solution. I have to move past this venting, and I've got to do something about it. And that's where we find the book of Philippians, the church here, and what they have done for the Apostle Paul. See, they didn't stop with venting. They were part of the solution. And that's how God wants us to be as well. God wants the church to be part of the solution, not just part of venting. God does not want the church to be a pastor that gets up and vents every week about the latest soapbox or issue or thing that we can do nothing about and have the church say, amen, hallelujah, we're so glad you talked about that. We'd all like to vent about that. Where the church ought to be in God's plan is that we can talk about an issue and then we know that there are solutions that we truly have for our life today. And then, as a church, we're mobilized to do something about it. Good. There are three people that agree with me so far. We'll keep working on it. James chapter 1, verse 27 talks about this. I think I put it on my PowerPoint. There we go. James chapter 1, verse 27. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this. Here's what religion should be. Here's what God wants for us to be. To visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world. Do we have widows and orphans around us today? Do you know there's a growing population in this. The orphans, children that are not being cared for by their parents, do we have this in America? It's a different set of circumstances that you would see in America than another country, probably. In another country, you would call it an orphanage. Today, you look at some, maybe your grandkids, or maybe your friend's kids or grandkids, or someone in the neighborhood, hopefully not your own children, that are not being treated well at home. They're in affliction. They're going through very difficult times at home. We're not talking about mom doesn't let me stay out past 10 o'clock as a curfew. We're talking about they're not eating well. They don't have places to sleep. That they don't have clothes that would be appropriate and things like that. That's happening in this community. And some of you are aware of that. True religion is to visit the widows and the orphans in their affliction, essentially, and then to keep oneself unstained from the world, is to be pure in your thinking. So essentially, it's that we, in a pure heart toward God, are reaching people that are here. We're reaching people that are afflicted. We are caring for other people. Okay? Another passage in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17 through 19. Let me just read this through, and this is a tough one. Let me set this passage up, because it's really tough. And most of you probably look at this and say, that's not me. As for the rich, now, stop. How many of you, don't raise your hand, would say in your mind, I'm rich? Don't raise your hand, because if you raise your hand, people around you are going to eye you up and be like, well, they're rich, so therefore. Okay, so as for the rich in this present age, charge them, tell them, command them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on uncertainty of riches, but on who? God. Okay, good. Who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. So God is the one that richly provides for the rich. So he says, don't set your hopes on these uncertainty of on the riches that, I mean, this is just, it's up and down, it's all over the place. Don't set your mind on this. It says they are to be good, to be rich in good works. Here's where you should be rich in. Rich toward God in your good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasures for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. So they can get really what life's all about. So they can find real satisfaction instead of it just being some empty kind of thing where, well, I've got the latest this, that, and the other thing. Now, I know what you're thinking is that's, you know, I know who's rich. I know Mr. and Mrs. Rich. They live like down the street a little bit. I know Mr. and Mrs. Rich. You know, I see what they have. They've got this kind of car. They've got this kind of house. I know what they have. I mean, they've got everything and then some. That's Mr. and Mrs. Rich. But can I just expand a little bit and say the average income throughout the world is $18,000 is what we've kind of, I've discovered in doing some research of what other analysts say. Now, and that's taken into a lot of account of things, and you can read the article if you want to and bore yourself to death. The top wage earners are earning over about $50,000 a year. That's top. Like, we're going into 5% or less now. To move up to 60, 70,000, wow, you're like the elite, okay? Now, that's defining the rich. So let's go a little bit further. That's monetary. Do you know that some people don't have water to drink? We have so much water. I was thirsty this morning, so I went back and pushed the button on the water fountain and got some water. We were out last week working in our yard, and we're digging around in some things, and I found this little concrete slab in the one section of my yard, and I thought, this is kind of a weird concrete thing. And so I start scraping it off, come to find out it's a big circle. So then I'm like, well, I wonder what that's all about. So then I pry it up and find out that inside there is an old well. Fascinating. In our backyard. So I put the kids in there and said, if you aren't good. So anyway, that's how that worked out. But the reality is we turn on a faucet and we get water. We flush a toilet. We are so rich. We are so rich. I mean, some people don't even have water. They would love to have water. They'd love to have good drinking water. They'd love to have a well. We are so rich that we take the water that we have and we spread it out on our properties so that we get greener grass. Have you thought about that? That's how rich we are. We're so rich that, I mean, if you think about this, if you go down, as I did, I went to Mexico a bunch of years ago, and if you go to Mexico, you go to the grocery store, it's not the grocery, it's not Acme, it's not Gennardi's, it's not ShopRite, it's not any, when you go to the grocery store, it's smaller than this room, and there's a few things on, it's not the same. You go down, go into our neck of the woods, and you go to ShopRite, and you don't like this kind of cereal, and you can find this one, or 100 other ones, right? You can get cereal whenever you want. You know, when the snowstorms hit, what goes? Milk, bread, eggs. Yeah, it's gone. I'm not sure why, but that's what happens. We're accustomed to, oh, no, we might be stuck for 3 hours, so we got to get all the milk, all the bread, all the eggs off the shelf, and I'm not sure what's going to happen after 3 hours, but I'm prepared now. It's like Y2K all over again. We're so rich that we see more food in a week than some people see in a lifetime. We're so rich that when we sit down to dinner, we expect to have enough to go around for the whole family. And we expect, for some of you, to have some leftovers so that tomorrow for lunch, I'm having me some leftovers. We expect that we, at the end of eating dinner, we expect that we're going to have ice cream or dessert. We don't expect to go hungry. Could you imagine one meal a day? How painful that would be. We are so rich that we eat at least three meals a day for most of us, and some of us eat four or five. I know, wives, you're nudging your husbands. I told you not to eat that much. You know, you have a hot dog meal a day or at night. You know, we are that rich. We are that group of people that we have so much. Even when I was in Germany, Germany was different in that you'd go and you get your bread for the day. Their refrigerators were not what we have as refrigerators. They had like a college-sized refrigerator, where a college dorm room-sized refrigerator, where you'd go and you'd have this little thing and it would just keep a few of the necessary items in there, and that's it. Think about even having a refrigerator today. We are so rich. I know, you're still thinking, yeah, but that, you don't understand. It's not like that. We really are. We just don't see it the same way as we should see it. We don't see the truth because of our tendency. And that's what I want to provoke us in this morning, to challenge us in, is just to talk about this. And so in Philippians chapter 4, then, the Apostle Paul gets into this, and he describes how the church in Philippi has been a blessing to him. He's rejoicing in verse 10, I rejoice in the Lord greatly and now at length because you have revived your concern for me. You were indeed concerned for me, but you had no opportunity. And so here's what happens. The Apostle Paul goes and starts this church over in this town called Philippi. He goes out and he's starting other churches throughout the region in different areas, so Galatia and Ephesus and Corinth. And so you have all these different areas where he's starting these churches. And as he's starting these churches in this area and the other one, he goes on to the next once it's established. And then he comes back and he visits or he writes letters. So he's writing a letter back to this church of Philippi. And what's happened is as he's gone about his journey, they have been a blessing to him repeatedly. So he's in a tough area and he needs financial means, and what they've done is they've sent a check along or sent the financial gift along to be able to care for the needs that he has in his life at that time. So that's where the church of Philippi has been. They've been generous. Their generosity is, what I'll say, unparalleled. And it really is incredible. And my question then for us is, how can we be generous? I know some of you have already turned the switch off in your mind. You're like, this is not a message for me. I am having a hard time paying my bills. I don't even know how I'm going to make it. Do you know how tight life is for me? I mean, look, being generous is for the rich people, not for me. So I don't know this message is really going to apply. Well, give it a shot, will you? Because I want to challenge the very core, the heart of it. Generosity really comes from this one thing. It's directly related to contentment. It's directly related to contentment. The Apostle Paul says in verse 11, "Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation that I am to be content." So he's talking about contentment. Generosity is directly tied to contentment. And here's just a couple thoughts to throw out at you. Without this, without contentment, you have no means to be generous. If you're not content, you will not have the means, the ability to be generous because you have already spent what you have. Everything you get, all of your time, all of your money, it belongs to you, and you have already spent it before you got it. Have you been there? Your paycheck spent way before. Maybe you've been here with me that you know you're getting a raise. For those that still get raises, okay? So you're getting a raise, and you're looking forward to that raise, and it's next month, and you've already figured out what you're going to buy with the raise that you're about to get. You see, what happens at the end of that is you have no means to be generous. You'll look at someone with need, and you'll say, I can't help you. I don't have the opportunity to help you, unless if I go into debt to help you. Good move or bad move? Bad. That's why, by the way, some of you wonder, why don't we allow credit cards to be used for offering here? That's why. That's why. There's two reasons. One, I don't want the extra interest that they charge for the usage of the credit card. And number two, I just don't see that we should be giving in a way that puts us into a position of being a burden to ourselves. It should be coming from the first fruit, not the, oh, stink, I feel so guilty, so therefore swipe, okay? You can do the PayPal thing, you can pay online through, you know, bill pay and stuff like that, but we're trying to monitor, make sure that it's coming out of an actual resource that you're not going into debt. I don't believe that we should supply our church that way, okay? Anyway, that was free. That wasn't even in my message. Anyway, without this, you have no means to be generous. When a need comes up, you'll vent about it. You'll be like, oh, man, that's awful. Do you see that homeless person? Man, they really need some help. Man, see that person? That they're going through this hard time. They really need somebody to help out with that. And we'll vent about it, but we won't be part of the solution because we can't. We have no ability, no means to do that. Without this, without contentment, you have no discernment to be generous. If you're not content, you will not know how to help somebody or when to help someone. You won't have that discernment. You'll look at someone that's in need that they're begging and saying, man, I really need some help with this, and I'm going through this hard time. And you won't know the discernment because you're not content yourself. So even if you got a couple extra bucks, you won't know to be generous with it. And you won't know when to be generous with it. Because you haven't learned what it is to be content. That becomes troublesome there. Generosity is directly tied to contentment. So then the other one is without this, without contentment, you only expect others to be generous. If you're going through a hard time or going through normal life, you've spent all that you can spend. You haven't saved anything for maintenance, okay? And sometimes that's part of life, but then other times when you have the extra, you're like, oh, good, now we can go to the movies, and I've been wanting to go get a steak dinner, and I'm going to treat my friends to that too because I'm going to be generous because the pastor told me to, and so we're going to go and we're going to kind of live it up. By the way, that's what it means to be the prodigal. Somebody asked me, what's prodigal mean? The prodigal son? I forget who asked me that. It was a great question, so I Googled it. Prodigal actually means just to spend money crazy. Okay, and sometimes we get into that where we're like, oh, cool, I'm just going to spend, and I'm going to entertain and be crazy about it, and it's going to be gone in 3 seconds because anybody, I mean, people love to sell you things, right? We get into this. Have you ever bought something you didn't know you wanted? You know what I'm saying? You ever have something, you're like, I didn't even know I wanted that, but I bought it anyway, okay? It's kind of interesting. So without this, you only expect others to be generous. That's for the rich people to do, and I'm not rich because I am so tight. I can't get through. I'm living paycheck to paycheck, and I need an extra paycheck to get from one paycheck to the next, to be honest with you. Now, I know that there are some here that you understand the contentment, and you're like, this message isn't for me. But I know that you haven't tuned out because you're hoping that somebody else picks it up. Okay? When you are not content, you'll view your circumstances as always being compared to the circumstances of others. I'm not rich, but I know Mr. Rich. I know Mrs. Rich. Here's the problem with discontentment. Discontentment, it denies God the right to do with us as he chooses. Do you know that? Discontentment, it denies the right for God to do with us what he chooses. When I'm discontent with my life, when I'm just miserable and I've got to have it my way, when I'm that way, what I'm saying is, God, you cannot have the right to do in my life what you want to do. Because I'm God. That's an issue. Discontentment fails to believe that these circumstances are best. Discontentment, it fails to believe that the circumstances that I'm going through right now are the best. Reality, contentment is a struggle. Contentment is a struggle. Daily. I have not mastered it. I feel I'm not even worthy to preach this message. So I'll stick closely to the text. This is huge. So, as we look at this, how do you get there? Contentment, it requires constant direction. In verse 11, Paul says, not that I'm speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation to be content. Here's the interesting thing. He says, I have learned. I have learned. I have directed my mind toward this. So how do we do this? It means that, first of all, we have to determine who defines our needs. We have to direct our mind toward contentment so that the first thing is, okay, what are my real needs? Who determines, who's the one that's defining the needs that I really have? He made this determination based on who defined his needs. He talks about the Lord constantly throughout this passage. Do you know that today, and there's a lot of gimmicks out there. There's just so many gimmicks. You know, you'll be content if you just had this. You know, if you had this magic shawl, you'd be content. If you had this water, the special water, you'd be... And there's a lot of gimmicks. This isn't a gimmick. This isn't, you know, playing a CD repeatedly or on your iPod app or whatever, and you're telling yourself, you know, you don't need anything. It's okay. It's not a gimmick kind of a thing. It's first of all, it's defining... determining who defines your needs. Today, you know, we allow everyone else to define our needs for us. Do you know that? It's interesting. We have allowed everyone else to tell us that we need a cell phone. Do we need a cell phone? I mean, 25 years ago, when I had my bag phone, you know, I had 300 minutes on there, no texting. And I couldn't get on the internet, I didn't even know what that was. It's interesting how everyone else determines what our needs are. They determine what our wants are. Do you know television's whole mentality is to get you to the commercial? It's not about the show. It's about the commercial. This is what drives television. And every commercial tells you what you need that you don't have. And if you watch the shopping network, you're really in trouble because you didn't even know the things that you really needed that they're telling you how much you need. It's interesting. They make you miserable. Oh, man, my life would be so much better if I just had that. They make us to want different clothes that we wear out and don't even wear out. We wear twice, and then we get rid of it and take it to the Goodwill because we don't like it anymore. They tell us how much food we should eat and what food we should be eating. They tell us what kind of car to drive. I mean, think about it. So I bought this truck a while back, and so in my truck is the coolest thing ever. So you sit down in the truck, and it's just, I like a truck, and so I'm sitting down in the truck, and just recently Matt got in the truck with me, and Matt went to put the window down. And Matt looked over, and he goes, wow, you got rollies in here, man. Now, for kids, you're like, what's a rollie? For adults, you're like, I get that. You know, we graduated from that. I mean, I need to have power windows and power locks. I mean, really? I've got to lean way over here. I've got to unbuckle my seatbelt to get all the way over here to lock the other door. I mean, I am suffering for Jesus, right? Who told us we need power doors and power locks? I'm just saying, I know, 99% of you have power windows and doors, and you're like, should I feel guilty now? That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is everyone else is determining our needs for us, not God. When Paul's writing this letter, where was he? We talked about this in prayer meeting a little bit. He's in prison, do you remember? So he's writing this letter, being chained to Roman guards. Good place or bad place? How would you like to be tied to a police officer 24/7? No offense, Tom. I'm sorry. But could you imagine this? Being tied up all day when you use the restroom? When you're doing anything that you're doing? This is where he's at. So what does he say in verse 11? I've learned in whatever situation, in whatever circumstance, I've learned to be what? Content. It started with understanding and determining who defined his needs. In this place, let me tell you what he didn't have. The Apostle Paul had no freedom. No freedom. He couldn't just run out and say, hey, listen, it's a beautiful day out. I'm going to go to the park, guys. I'd like to go plant some flowers, so I'm going to run down to Lowe's, Home Depot, and I'm going to pick up some flowers. And could he do any of that? No. He's tied to these Roman guards. No freedom, little food. I would imagine that the soldiers didn't share their peanut butter and jelly with him. Little food. Poor health, we know this based on the things that he's written in other letters, that his health was poor. He didn't have television, didn't have cable, didn't have phone or a cell phone, didn't have an iPod, and no internet. Could you imagine a life without internet? And he said this crazy statement. I have learned to be content. Now, do you see how heavy of a passage this is? The problem that I see us getting into is contentment. It requires constant direction, and you have to, first of all, start with determining who is defining your needs. If you never wrestle this one through and figure out who's defining this for you, you'll just allow everyone else and yourself to say, I need this. So yesterday I was out, up doing some work for somebody, and I was working. I got there about 7 o'clock and left around 5 o'clock. And so I'm working, and I didn't bring lunch with me. So I had breakfast in the morning at 7 o'clock, and on my way I was eating breakfast. And so I was there throughout the day, and I didn't have any food with me throughout the day. I just had drinks. And this passage is going through my mind as I'm doing this work in this place. And while I'm going through this, I'm thinking, you know, the truth is I really don't have to go get lunch. That's probably not going to be that great for me because I was only going to do fast food anyway. That was really not the best for me, and cholesterol and all this stuff. So I'm beginning to think this through and saying, well, who's defining my need? Because somebody else defined for me that I must eat lunch at 12 o'clock. And if you know me, I am a creature of habit. At 12 o'clock, and Rebecca knows at 12 o'clock the whistle blows in my mind and I got to have lunch. It's time. Right? And Melanie knows too, and they just kind of laugh at me, and oh, it's 12 o'clock, and dinner's who defined that for me? Well, that's how I was raised, and that's the way the workplace is, and that's what, I actually didn't eat again until about 7 o'clock last night. Isn't that nuts? I went 12 hours, not sleeping, and didn't eat anything. Is there something wrong with me? I did go to Teppanyaki Grill, the buffet, and had made up for it, not really. But But truth, truth, we allow everything and everyone else to define our needs for us. When you stop and think about it, most times we eat when we're not hungry. We buy clothes that we really don't like that much 3 weeks later. And we do all kinds of things that probably shouldn't, maybe shouldn't, couldn't do. And we are unhappy because we haven't learned contentment because everyone else defines my needs for me. Second point, define or determine how to view your circumstance. Paul, as he's writing this, he says, I've learned to be content, so it requires constant direction. This is that learning. I'm directing my mind toward this thing. So he's determining who to find his needs, and then he determines how to view his circumstances. So we need to determine that. How do you view your circumstance? So here's the Apostle Paul, and he says, I know, verse 12, I know how to be brought low. I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. So how do you view your circumstances? He looked at the times where he's at his lowest points, the times where he has plenty, and he's looking at all the same through the same grid. He's looking this and viewing, as we looked at last week, who's our commander? God, and what we have to do is we have to direct the command center. So we look and we say, okay, God's in control of my circumstances. He put me here in house arrest. He's chaining up these Roman guards to me, and it looks like Paul's the one that's in jail, but the truth is the Roman soldier's like, oh, no, I've got Paul, and he's the one that's strapped to him, and he's got to hear the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ as he's describing it out to him, and he's got to put up with and listen to Paul all day long or however long his shift is. Isn't it amazing? Here's Paul looking at his circumstance from God's perspective. God's the commander. He's actively training the command center. He's making this something that is directed by God, and that circumstance is not something he's backing up and saying, oh, I hate my circumstance. He's saying this is a circumstance that God has put me into. Do you know that most people, and you're probably one of them, we try to control our circumstance, and I am too. I like to control my circumstance, don't you? I like to control the outcomes of things. I like to control how things go. I would like to control this. Life must be fair, right? I got to be in control of fairness. If it's not fair, there's a problem. I got to do this. I've got to control the things that I have and the things that I don't have. And here's what most people do. Most people say, God, here's our Christian theology at work. God, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pray about this thing that I really, 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 really want. And God, if you don't come through, this is the fine print at the bottom of our prayer that we don't really tell God, but it's in our mind. The fine print says, if God, you don't come through with me, MasterCard, Visa, or somebody else will. That's normal. That's the life we live. That's not just with finances, but that's with relationships. In relationships, it's, God, this person is really annoying me. This person is making me uncomfortable. So God, you better change them. I'm venting to you, God. This is my prayer. At the bottom, the fine print says, and if you don't change that person, I'm leaving. And if you don't change the circumstance and make my life more comfortable, I'm out. That's our normal prayer. Is that the way Paul is speaking in this passage? Could he get out of jail? Could he, listen, I know there's extremes of, well, what if the abuse, and I'm not talking about extremes, I'm talking about just regular, like in the middle of the road, normal life that you're going through, okay? Because we can deal with extremes at a different time. We like to talk extremes. Let's not do that. Let's just do normal. So here's the Apostle Paul in the extreme, saying, I've learned, I've directed my mind toward being content, no matter what the circumstance, because I've directed my mind to defining my needs by the way that God is defining my needs. So here's what God's done. Has God provided for him the food that he needs? Clothing? A house over his head? God's provided for him. See, we operate with a plan B mentality, and that's not contentment at all. Plan A is, God, I'm depending on you. God, whatever circumstance you determine for me is the one I will be satisfied in. And we go back to Psalm chapter 23. We know the psalm, right? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Is almost literally, I don't want another shepherd but you, Lord. It's almost circular. Do you see that? He leads me beside still water. He feeds me from these green pastures. That's my shepherd. David wrote that psalm and wrote other psalms at very difficult times in his life where he's saying, God is so awesome. God is so good. My soul is satisfied in him and in him alone. Forget about the circumstance that the king is putting me through. Forget about the difficulty that I'm going through with this one. God is God. I'm trusting him in all of my circumstances. That's where we need to be. That's what the Apostle Paul is speaking of too. The Lord is my shepherd. No matter what the circumstance, it's God, you are God. Determine how to view your circumstance. Here's how you constantly direct your thoughts. It's funny that Paul doesn't complain about his circumstances. He doesn't complain. As a matter of fact, if you think about what he's actually doing, this whole letter that he's writing back to the church in Philippi, could this whole letter be a thank you card? If you were in jail, if you're in the worst time of your life, could you even grab the thought to say thank you? Isn't that the hardest time? And that's what Paul's doing. The circumstance didn't deter him from being grateful, thankful, and he says in verse 11, I'm rejoicing in the Lord. And he says there in verse 13, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Look, I can get through this through him who strengthens me. I can make it past this point through him who strengthens me. I can get by because he is strengthening me. So last point, determine to be generous for God's glory. Determined to be generous for God's glory. Verse 14 says, yet it was kind of you to share my trouble. So was the Apostle Paul in any kind of trouble? Yeah, this is not the ideal location to be. It was kind of you to share my trouble. Verse 15, you Philippians, yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving except you only. So while he's going from one church to the next, planting church after church after church, the church of Philippi is the only one that's caring for him financially while he's making the sacrifice of going out and doing all of this work for the Lord. He says, even in Thessalonica, you sent me help for my needs once and again. Not that I seek a gift. He clarifies, look, I'm not taking an offering just to get money out of you. Okay? But I seek the fruit that increases to your credit. What you are doing, church, is you are then, because of your generosity, you're enabling Paul to go and spread the gospel. There is fruit because of the money that's being sent to him. And in the same way, we do that here. We send money along to missionaries, to people, to be able to allow for them to be able to do what they need to do to spread the gospel. So there's the principle or the biblical warrant for that and other passages as well. In verse 18, I have received full payment and more. What's he saying? I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Financially, things are awesome. I am well supplied, having received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent, a fragrant offering, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God. Have you ever thought about the offering time in the service as being a fragrant offering to God? Just this, I'm not talking about like walking into Yankee Candle, where guys, we walk into Yankee Candle and we're blown away with a headache about 3 seconds into it, like, oh, man. I mean, even in the mall, I don't know if you're like this or not, but I can smell Yankee Candle about, 15 stores away, and I want to avoid it like the plague and go around, guys, you with me? Okay, and if they have, they got the new candles, the 2x4 cent, oh, that's good stuff. Anyway, but have you ever thought of your offering as being the one candle that you love to smell? Because actually, I like clean cotton. The Yankee Candle fragrance. Who's Yankee? Anybody clean cotton? Okay, a few of you. All right, good. And when that's going on at home, it's like, oh, it smells so clean and fresh. The offering. When we give our tithes and offering to the Lord, it's a sweet-smelling offering, a fragrance to the Lord. He says, that's it. You're getting my heart. What is God's heart? John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he what? That he what? He what? Do you get it? He was generous toward us. And by our understanding of him flowing out of that, as the Apostle Paul did as our example as well, we follow that and we say, this is where we should be generous, because he was generous, because he left a principle of how to be generous. We then will be generous. In what? In everything. In everything. Over picking up some firewood a few weeks ago, and there's a person that lives near me. They had a tree cut down, and through different things, they called me and said, hey, if you want this wood, come and get it. And they were so generous in even making the phone call and being so patient and letting me do that on my schedule, which took longer than I planned and expected and wanted. And so I was there finishing up a couple weeks ago, picking up the last load of firewood. And I think I had 4 or 5 truckloads. It was awesome. And so I'm there the last time. And you have to understand, you look at the person's house and you say, they're not rich. Poor? I wouldn't say that. But you look at the person and say, they're not rich. And we measure people that way, don't we? Here's the coolest thing. She blew me away. That at the end of loading up my truck, I just came and said, thank you, thank you, thank you. This has been such a blessing. This will probably heat my house for like a couple months next winter. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And she said, oh, wait. I want you to take this watermelon. And I'm like, but you just gave me like all this wood. And she said, you have 5 kids. I got a really good deal on it. I can get another one. And if I were to measure her up, she's on a fixed income, she's senior, and so I'm just thinking, that's not right. I feel bad. But I believe God did that to throw that at me. It's not about giving $100. Generosity is flowing out of your heart and saying, I have something to give. I just want to be a blessing. In church, do you know you can be a blessing just by saying hi to people? Do you know you can go beyond that and be there for people at different points? Maybe not even when they need you there, but just by saying hi and building relationships here. You know, the rest of the week, you're bombarded by people that are trying to get over on you, you know, in different kind of ways. You're bombarded by people that really don't want anything to do with God. This is your one chance to build relationships with people that love the Lord. Assuming that we all love the Lord here. You can actually be generous by going up and building a relationship with someone that's beyond here. But I know, here's the pushback. I don't have time for that. It takes determination to be generous with your time. It takes determination to be generous. The church in Philippi, they said at first, Paul said, you didn't have opportunity. This is verse 11. But then when you had the opportunity, you gave. So you make a determination to put yourself in the position to have an opportunity. Maybe with your time schedule, you say, I am just overloaded with time, and I've got all this stuff going on. Maybe over time, you say, I need to really change that because I'm not able to be generous with my time. Or financially, say, I need to change that because I'm not able to be generous with my finances. I need to change this and work it out. Be determined to be generous. How? By being content. Could you imagine the difference that would make in our lives if we really were living this way? Truth. Could you imagine? I know some of you do. Some of you, I have such great respect for you in the way that you live content and you can live with the same things and you just, it's just amazing to me how you'll just be content and go through. And I look at you, smile, and you're enjoying. I just think it's phenomenal. What if we all as a church grabbed onto this and we learned to be content, learned then to be generous? It'd be awesome. Think about how many people we'd be able to give watermelon to. Think about how many people we could be a blessing to. Here, I'll challenge you. This is not for our here. When you leave today, maybe when you're at Wawa or Dunkin' Donuts, or maybe wherever you find yourself, treat someone else to $1 worth of something, or maybe $1.50 or $2 if it takes that. I dare you. Be generous with $2. Watch how difficult it is. That will determine how much of a struggle it is for you to be content with what you have. And evaluate as you work out of that and say, wow, I really need to work on this. But then on the flip side, recognize how cool it is. But before you do, would you pray about it? Say, God, give me the strength to do this. And he says in verse 19 as we close, and my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. Here they're giving this sweet-smelling, this savoring sacrifice is acceptable and pleasing to God. And he says, look, God's going to supply all of your needs. He is rich. He is rich. As a church, I want for us to be a church that's like this. And we already are doing some things like that, and we're going to continue to increase and do as much as God allows for us. As we have opportunity, we want to do that. And so here's what I've done. Jamie is the director of our missions program here, and we have missionaries all over the world. We have 19 different missionaries that we are financially caring for and supporting. So I've asked Jamie to come and to give us an update on what's going on with the missionaries and hear back from them as to what's been going on. So Jamie, you come and share.